back. Lucan thought about it for a few moments.
Of course. The star. You're a genius, Neela, he said, jumping with excitement.
What about the star? Neela asked, confused.
A five-pointed star and five indentations. Look at how the star is created on the wall. It's been drawn in one continuous line, without beginning or end. All the points of the star are connected. Maybe all I need to do is magically connect the indentations with each other, just like the star, and not just press them, Lusam said excitedly.
It's worth a try, Neela agreed.
Lusam cleared his mind and concentrated on connecting the indentations magically in the same configuration the star had been created. He wasn't sure exactly how he could do it. He finally concentrated on the image of what he wanted and let the power flow out of him. A green line of power burst into life, connecting each of the indentations with the next and creating a perfect five-pointed star to mirror the one on the wall. With a grinding sound and a flurry of dust, the wall, very slowly, started to move on its own.
You did it!
Shouted Neela excitedly, hugging and kissing him on the cheek at the same time.
Yeah, looks like it.
You'll have to find me more doors to open if you're going to do that every time, he said, grinning at her. She just smiled back at him, and they waited for the door to fully open, trying to be as patient as was humanly possible. When the door had finally fully opened and the dust settled, Neela said,
Maybe I should go in alone first.
Why? He asked, confused at her request.
Well, seeing as you're the only one who can open this door with magic, it makes sense for me to go inside first, just in case the door closes again and traps me inside. Then you could let me back out again. If we both go in together, who would let us both out?
She said, as if it was the most obvious thing in the world. Lusam laughed.
That's a good point, he agreed. The only problem is, there may be other dangers in there that you can't see, but I might be able to see with my mage sight. I suggest you take a lantern and enter the room. If the door remains open, wait until I enter and check the room for hidden traps before you move any further inside, just to be on the safe side.
I hadn't thought about that either. Maybe you're right. Okay, I'll go and see if the door stays open, but be ready to get me out of there if it closes fast,
Neela replied, looking a little less confident than she had a moment ago.
Sure. No problem. But if it closes even twice as fast as it opened, we would still have enough time for a picnic before we'd be in any danger of getting locked inside,
he chuckled.
True,
she agreed, smiling back at him. She took her lantern and approached the darkened room. As she reached the entrance, she held up the lantern and took a step forward into the room. As soon as her foot made contact with the floor, the whole room suddenly burst into light.
Ah, my eyes,
she said. Now shielding her eyes from the daylight-strength light emanating from the walls all around her. Lusam came running towards the room and stopped just outside the doorway, then looked tentatively inside. The room was circular in shape, with a single pedestal in the center. On the pedestal was a single item. As Neela's eyes became accustomed to the bright light, she also took in the almost empty room. Empty apart from a single item sitting atop the pedestal.
Oh, great! Just what we need, another book,
Neela said, exasperated. Lusam burst out laughing at Neela's reaction. She was obviously expecting a room full of gold, silver and gemstones, and not a single book to be so well guarded behind the almost impenetrable wall. Lusam noticed another five indentations in the same configuration on the inside of the room, and felt confident he would be able to reopen the door from the inside should it close automatically while they were still inside. He walked over to where the large book was placed on top of the pedestal and looked at the title. He didn't recognize the language the text was written in. He had never seen anything like it before.
I can't read the language this is written in. I wonder what kind of book it is,
he said, looking at the ornately designed leather and metal-bound cover of the book.
Maybe it's some kind of holy book that the monks used in the past,
he guessed.
Could be, I guess. But if nobody can read it anymore, I guess we'll never know,
replied Neela.
Lusam was curious as to what the book contained, so he took a step up onto the base of the pedestal where he could better see the contents of the book. Reaching out, he opened the book, ready to try and make sense of its contents, when a searing light stunned his whole body. He instantly turned rigid as a force field of some kind completely surrounded his entire body.
Neela noticed the sudden change and called out to him, but he was unable to respond as he could no longer hear her calls.
Lusam!
She cried out. Neela reached out to grab him, and was violently thrown across the room by the force field now surrounding him. Luckily, she wasn't hurt badly, and quickly got back to her feet, whilst rubbing the lump that was now forming on the back of her head. She didn't know what to do. She couldn't reach him because of the force field, and he wasn't responding to her ever-desperate calls. She also dare not leave him, in case the door closed again and trapped him inside all alone. Panic pulsed through her with every breath she took. She hadn't known Lusam that long, but he was the best friend she had ever had. More than a friend, she realized at that moment. Maybe she actually loved him. She wasn't sure. What she was sure about was the fact she couldn't lose him. Not here, not now. It was her stupid idea to try and open this room, and now it had resulted in this happening to Lusam. Neela paced around and around the outside of the room, trying to think of a solution, but she could think of nothing. At one point, in sheer desperation, she had sat down and cried for several minutes, before finally pulling herself together again and once more attempting to come up with an answer, but to no avail. The passage of time was difficult to judge, but she guessed at least 40 minutes had elapsed since Lusam had become trapped. She had come to the conclusion that she must risk leaving him and get help somehow from somewhere. She was about to leave the room when she heard, rather than saw, the force field vanish, and Lusam collapsed onto the floor, clutching the now closed book to his chest.
Lusam,
she called to him, running over to where he'd fallen. As Lusam became more aware of his surroundings, he realized he was being hugged tightly by Neela. She was crying whilst calling his name and apologizing over and over again. Confused, but enjoying the attention from her, he hugged her back, and while stroking her hair, asked,
"What's the matter? Why are you crying? Are you okay?" "Yes, I'm fine now. Are you hurt?"
she asked, still crying on his shoulder.
"No, I'm fine, I think. I just know things. Things about magic that I didn't know before. Strange things. Strange, but incredible things. It's hard to explain. It's all spinning in my head at the moment.
I was so worried about you. I was going crazy in here looking at you just standing there, and I couldn't do anything to help you,"
she sobbed into his shirt.
"I don't understand. I just opened the book and then fell onto the floor. How can you have got so worried about me?"
he asked, confused.
"You opened the book, and some kind of force field froze you up there on that pedestal. I tried to get you out, but I couldn't. You were stuck in there for a long time, maybe 40 minutes or more, then you just collapsed onto the floor just now."
"I only remember opening the book. Then I felt dizzy and fell over. It all happened in a blink of an eye for me,"
he replied, hugging her close as she still clung to him tightly.
"Please, can we get out of here? I've had enough treasure hunting for one day,"
she said.
"Sure, come on. Let me help you up,"
he replied, helping her to her feet. Neela was keen to get out of the room and hastily headed for the exit, where she waited for Lusam to join her. Lusam walked towards the door absent-mindedly, still carrying the book clutched tightly to his chest. As he reached the threshold of the door, another force field suddenly came into being and catapulted him back inside the room. The book vanished from his hands and reappeared on the pedestal again as he landed with a thud on the floor at the base of the pedestal.
"Ouch,"
he said, stunned, then slowly started to stand up again.
"Are you okay?"
Neela asked desperately from the doorway, obviously afraid to test if the force field was still active.
"Yeah, I'm fine, thanks,"
he replied, dusting off his clothes for the second time in as many minutes. Lusam walked back over to the door and gingerly reached out towards where the force field had just thrown him across the room. Hoping he wasn't now trapped in the room, he was very relieved to find that the force field was now gone. Well, I guess whoever placed that book here didn't want it to leave this room. It seems I can walk out without the book just fine, but not with it. As he turned to take one last look at the strange book, the illuminated walls fell into darkness, and the stone door began its long, slow closing process. On their way back to the book room, Lusam was trying to make sense of what was now in his head. He was sure he knew the entire contents of the book somehow, and yet he didn't fully understand it. As time passed, it became easier for him to pick out individual pieces of information that he'd absorbed magically from the strange book. From simple spells to extremely complex spells, he seemed to know them all in exquisite detail. As they entered the book room, Neela asked,
What did you mean back there, when you said you knew things?
I was just thinking about that myself. To be honest, it's very hard even for me to understand.
He stood still, thinking for a few moments, before continuing.
I was thinking maybe the book was some kind of special training tool, one that the monks used to teach themselves how to use magic. I'm not really sure why, but I get the feeling it's much more than that for some strange reason,
he said, taking a seat at the writing desk.
I don't suppose it taught you a fast way to clear this book mountain,
Neela said, laughing, nodding towards the huge stack of books that were still piled high in the corner of the room. Searching his newfound knowledge, he replied,
Actually, maybe I could speed things up a little. I discovered how to levitate things, so I could levitate the piles of books from over in the corner and save us having to carry them by hand. That would save us some time and effort.
Lusam stood up from behind his writing desk, and without waiting for a reply from Neela, he recalled the spell for levitating objects. As he began formulating the spell in his mind, a pile of around 20 large books levitated off the floor and started to float towards them. Neela jumped backwards, out of the path the books seemed to be taking, just as they started to wobble.
Crash! The books came tumbling down in a huge, jumbled mess all over the floor.
Whoops. Sorry, Lusam said, looking a little embarrassed.
Neela rolled her eyes at the mess and replied,
Seems like you need to practice that a bit more.
Yeah, I guess so, he agreed.
He tried to think of an analogy to fit the way it felt to try and use the magic the book had forced into his brain. He thought for a couple of minutes, and then decided the best way he could describe how it felt was to say, It's like believing you already know how to ride a horse, but only because you've been told how to do it, or you've seen it done by others many times before, but without actual practice riding the horse itself, you're likely to fall off a lot, if that makes any sense to you.
Yeah, I suppose it does, Neela agreed.
Then, after thinking a moment, she added,
Why don't you practice in the large chamber in the evenings, after my reading lessons?
Well, that sounds great, as long as you're not going to be too bored.
If you are, I suppose you could always explore the rest of this place while I practice my magic,
Lusam said.
No chance,
she replied very hastily. Then, after a few seconds, when her natural instinct to find hidden treasure had obviously caught up with her again, she added,
Well, maybe I could just take a little look around, just to see if I can find anything interesting.
Lusam laughed at her, and he started to pick up the books he had dropped on the floor.
Just stay well away from any secret doors with big stars on them, and I'm sure you'll be just fine.
That's not funny. I was really worried about you, Neela said.
Then, keeping him guessing, she added,
I'm glad you're not stuck in that room forever anyway. It would have been hard for me to get paid from Mr. Daffer, with you being the only person who can read here.
She quickly turned away from him so he couldn't see the amused look on her face and started picking up books with her back to him.
Hey,
he said in a pretend hurt voice. He crept up behind her and tickled her sides with both hands. Neela squealed and dropped the books on the floor again with an echoing crash, spinning around quickly and coming face to face with Lusam. He didn't release his grip. And they found themselves standing very close to each other, gazing into each other's eyes for what seemed like hours. Then he leant forward and gently kissed her perfect lips before whispering,
Thank you for being worried about me. You're welcome,
she whispered back breathlessly. Then she pulled him even closer and gave him a much more passionate kiss than he had ever thought possible. That night, he took one of the large books to his room. He knew there wasn't much chance of him sleeping after kissing Neela like that. All he could think about were her soft lips and the way she felt pressed against him while they kissed. He really was falling in love with her, and hoped beyond hope that she felt the same way about him. He hadn't had very much, if any, experience when it came to girls. Growing up on the streets gave you a different set of priorities, like where your next meal was coming from, or how to survive the latest winter storm. He didn't know if Neela had any more experience than he did, but he guessed her life must have been far less restrictive in recent years than his had been. It was seventh day tomorrow, a rest day, when they both usually went for a walk in the forest. Neela had enjoyed their first trip to the forest so much she had asked to go back several times since. Lusam would have been happy to go anywhere with Neela. Just being in her company made him feel happy. But the forest had always had a special place in his heart, and so he looked forward to their weekly trip with even more enthusiasm. The book he had brought with him to his sleeping cell was very thick and heavy, but he hadn't intended to read it. Lusam thought that several of the spells he had acquired might be especially useful in their current situation. Part of it, however, required him to be proficient with the levitation spell, the one he had failed at so miserably earlier that day. So he spent the first part of the night practicing levitating the book off his bed. After a couple of hours, he became very good at the spell and decided to visit the bookroom to collect more books. He was curious to find out if it took more effort as the weight and number of objects were increased. He stood up from his bed and reached for the lantern, before realizing he no longer needed a lantern. With a single thought, an extremely bright sphere of light flared into existence right in front of his face, almost blinding him. He quickly cancelled the spell and returned his room back to its normal light level again. All he could see were white spots dancing in front of his eyes wherever he looked. Re-examining his knowledge of the spell, he realized that he should have created the orb above himself and far less bright. It seemed even the simplest of spells needed a certain amount of practice to perfect them. After 10 minutes, his vision seemed to have returned to normal, and he decided to try again. This time, the light orb appeared above him, but the light level was still too high, so concentrating, he dimmed it to an appropriate level. Smiling to himself, he started to leave his room, only to realize the light orb had remained where he had created it. Searching his newfound wealth of knowledge, he quickly applied the spell that would make the light orb follow him, and he set off again towards the bookroom. When he arrived at the bookroom, he started his experiment by lifting a small pile of 3 books that were already stacked neatly on the floor. They started to float up into the air, just like the single book had done so many times in his room. Whilst moving them around the room, he found it took only fractionally more energy to move the 3 books than it had the single book. He spent the next hour or so lifting an ever-increasing number of books until he was unable to lift any more. He had found his current limit, but he was still very impressed at the number he could lift at any one time. He also noticed that moving the location of a large number of books required more energy than just levitating them. The distance from where he was trying to levitate the books also increased the energy required, as did the number of items. If there were 10 books in a pile, it was much easier to move the whole pile than it would have been to move 10 single books laid out on the floor individually. The use of his new magical abilities had certainly had an effect on his body, too. He now felt so tired he could almost have imagined he had actually moved all those books by hand and would have been happy to have just slept where he stood. Yawning loudly, he turned and headed back to his cell. He decided that he would at least try and get some sleep, even if it was only for the few remaining hours of the night that were left to him. Almost as soon as his body touched the mattress, he was asleep and dreaming of a certain girl now close to his heart. The next morning, Neela was up at her usual time, but noticed Lusam was still sleeping soundly as she passed his sleeping cell. She decided not to disturb him, and instead go out to the market and get the provisions that they would need for their weekly trip to the forest. She always enjoyed visiting the market in the early mornings, and had been part of her daily duties back in Stelgad when she'd lived in the thieves' guild known as the Crows. She had always been the one who would visit the various local traders and arrange for the food to be delivered to a warehouse that was secretly owned by the Crows Guild. Locally, the warehouse was believed to be a simple storage facility, one that would supply the local riverboat captains and road caravans with fresh produce, but in reality, it was used to supply the Crows Guild. Acquiring food using this method greatly reduced the risk of a rival guild poisoning the food supply, as it wasn't delivered directly to their guild headquarters. Some of the food was in fact sold to various riverboat captains and merchants to keep up the illusion of a supply warehouse, but most of it was destined for the dining hall of the Crows Guild. Neela knew the freshest and best produce was always available first thing in the mornings at any market. Freshly baked breads, firm ripe fruits and vegetables were all easy to obtain if you got to the market early enough. Being seventh day meant she would have to visit the market in the west quarter of town. The wealthy people chose not to work on the seventh day, instead having a day of rest, but it was never an option for the poorer people of the city, who always had to work hard to make enough to live. As Neela left the bookshop and turned to walk down the cobbled street towards the market in the West District, she couldn't help feeling sad at the loss of her friends and colleagues at the Crows Guild. She had spent her entire life growing up among them, and although she had never received the kind of love a normal family might give their child, she was not ill-treated in any way either. She often wondered if any of them had survived that awful night. Maybe a few lucky ones had been out on guild business or running errands like she had been. Before meeting Lusam, she had thought about going back to Stelgad almost daily to see if anyone had survived, but knew it would be a death sentence for her if she tried. Somehow it didn't seem to hurt as much now she'd met Lusam. Realizing this was the first time she had thought about her old guild in a long time, she allowed herself a brief smile and continued towards the marketplace. One thing she did miss from her old life in the guild, however, were the tools of her trade. She had been forced to leave everything that she owned at her old headquarters and flee the city that fateful night. The thing she missed most of all was her thick leather belt, which held her finely balanced throwing knives. When Neela first arrived in Helveel, she had fully intended to replace the throwing knives and belt using the money she'd got from selling the stolen horse. That plan, however, didn't work out for her, as she was refused entry to one of the local guilds and had to spend what little money she had simply to survive. Although her current job of sorting books was far less dangerous than the life of a thief, she still felt half naked and vulnerable without the reassuring weight of her trusty throwing knives at her waist. Having found everything she needed at the early market, Neela headed back to the bookshop with a spring in her step. She enjoyed going to the forest so much with Lusam. She always felt relaxed there, as if she belonged somehow. It was hard to explain, but in a town or city, she had always been aware of everyone and everything around her, what they were doing, how they were acting, and what they were looking at. It was a good trait for any member of a thieves' guild to have. Being fully aware of your surroundings usually helped keep you alive. She never realized just how tense she must have always been in towns and cities until she first visited the forest with Lusam and was able to truly relax for the first time in her life. Entering the shop, she saw Lucy behind the counter writing some information down on a piece of parchment.
"Good morning, Lucy," Neela said with a smile. "Good morning to you too," Lucy replied in a quiet voice. "Is everything okay, Lucy? You don't sound yourself today." "I'm not feeling too well at the moment, I'm afraid. Probably just a chill," Lucy replied with a slightly forced smile. "I hope you feel better soon. If you need anything, just let me know. I don't mind going to the apothecary if you need any medicine to make you feel better," Neela offered. "That's very kind of you, Neela, but I'm sure I'll be fine, thank you." "Okay. If you change your mind later, you know where I am," Neela said, before heading to the stairs of the underground chamber.
Neela made her way straight to the book room, expecting to find Lusam working there while she had been gone, but she found the room was empty. When she reached his cell, she found him still in bed, asleep. Worried he might be ill too, she tried to wake him up gently, but he didn't seem to stir. All manner of things flashed through her head, not least of which involved the previous day's strange encounter with the book in the hidden room. Maybe it had damaged him in some way. Almost panicking, she grabbed his shoulder and tried to shake him awake. With a groan, he turned towards her, and with tired-looking eyes squinting against the light, he asked,
"What's up? What time is it?"
Relieved to see him awake and well, she relaxed a little before replying,
"It's mid-morning, sleepyhead. Time to get up. Don't forget we're going to the forest today."
The first thing Lusam noticed sitting up in bed was the enormous headache he'd woken up with, and his stomach felt emptier than he could ever remember. Seeing the parcels of food in Neela's hand was more than his stomach could take, and it let out a huge rumble.
"Good thing I went out and brought us some breakfast by the sounds of that," she said,
nodding towards his overactive stomach.
"Oh, breakfast sounds wonderful," he said,
still eyeing the parcels like a hungry wolf. After they had eaten breakfast, he felt much better. Even his headache had almost subsided completely by the time they were ready to leave for their day out in the forest. Outside, there were the first signs of spring in the air. The sun was shining, and the first batch of insects had hatched and were flying around clumsily in the cool morning air, as they always did that time of year. He was under no illusions, however. He knew even though it was a warm, spring-like day today, it could be snowing this time tomorrow if the wind changed direction again. The weather this close to the mountains was always unpredictable, but especially so during early spring and late autumn. Lusan was hoping that last night with Neela in the book room was something that would be repeated again, and sooner rather than later if he had any choice in the matter. He tried to think of something intelligent to say to her, something that wouldn't sound too forward. But everything he came up with in his mind, he thought, made him sound like a complete fool. He eventually decided to just take the plunge and hold her hand, which, to his great relief, she didn't seem to mind at all. They left Helvile via the east gate as usual, and headed towards the bridge that crossed the river, still holding hands. Once they had crossed the bridge, Lusam asked, "Would you mind if we walked along the river for a while before we go into the forest today?"
"Sure, no problem. Something on your mind?" Neela asked.
"No, not really. I was thinking last night that maybe I could combine several of my new spells to help us out a little."
"Help us out? In what way?" she asked curiously.
"Well, Mr. Daffer's job is fine, but it won't last forever. So last night I was thinking about how my new spells could earn us a living in the future. The obvious would be at carnivals performing magic tricks, but I was always told never to reveal my power to anyone because it could be very dangerous for me."
"But you showed me your magic in the forest with the animals," Neela said.
"Yes, but you're different. I trust you," he said, smiling at her. He gestured for them to sit down on the bank of the river, and she sat down beside him.
"So what's your idea? I hope it doesn't involve levitating anything," she said, giggling to herself.
He quickly looked around to make sure nobody could see them, and without a second thought, he lifted her clean off the ground and into the air while she kicked and screamed for him to put her down immediately. Laughing at her flailing her arms and legs around in mid-air, Lusam said, "Actually, I was practicing last night. I've become quite good at it. In fact, I bet I could keep you there all day."
"Hmm, I wonder if it's any more difficult to hold something above the water." "Don't you dare," she screamed at him. "Put me down right now."
"Only if you promise not to make fun of me anymore," he replied, still laughing at her.
Yes, I promise. Now put me down," she squealed.
He gently lowered her to the ground and released his spell. Whack! She hit his arm.
"Don't ever do that again," she yelled at him.
Neela actually looked visibly shaken by the experience, and Lusan was very hard-pressed to stop laughing at her expense. Regaining control of his amusement, he offered a half-hearted, "Sorry." Neela glowered at him as he tried to put his most apologetic face on, but inside he still found her reaction amusing, to say the least, and he was sure she could tell. After a few minutes of silence, Neela asked,
"So, are you going to tell me what you thought of last night that would help us or not?"
"Well, as you may or may not know, the city of Helvile is an old mining town. This river runs directly from the Elvi Mountains, and it used to contain lots of gold in its sediment. It's been a long time since it's been worth panning for gold here, but I think I can collect enough gold with magic to make it worth the effort," he replied, then waited for her to start teasing him about his idea. He was pleasantly surprised when she just calmly replied,
"Do you really think you could do that?"
"Yes, I think so. I can locate any gold that's in the river magically, then levitate it off the riverbed. Once I've collected it all together, I can remove it from the river easy enough. The problem would be how to create coins or strips with it. I have a few ideas about that, but it might take a bit of practice before I get it right." Neela was silent for what seemed like a long time, and at first Lusam thought she might be too skeptical about his idea, but he was soon proved wrong.
"Once you've got the gold out of the river, it wouldn't matter how long it took you to turn it into coins," she said, nodding towards the river. "Even if you couldn't make anything out of it, the gold would still be worth money."
"Yes, I thought about that too. The problem is, if we turn up in town with a bag full of gold dust, it's likely to start a fresh gold rush around here, and then we would have to find another river to work. Not to mention all the unwanted attention we would get. I don't know about you, but I would rather do without that," he said, looking out over the sparkling water.
"Yes, I can see that might be a problem," Neela agreed. "So, are you going to try it now?"
"That was the idea. I was searching the riverbed as we walked along, and I could sense gold all along its length, but here it was a bit stronger. I'm not sure what this will look like when I start the process, so I need you to keep a good lookout for anyone who might see us and warn me if anyone approaches."
"That sounds easy enough to me. Just let me know when you're ready to start."
"No time like the present, I guess," he said, before starting the spell to locate all the gold within his range. As he concentrated, he could sense thousands upon thousands of small particles of gold. There was no way he could single out each and every particle all at the same time and then raise them from the riverbed as one. He thought about the problem for a while, then turned to Neela and said, "I think I'll have to do this a different way from the way I planned. There's a fair bit of gold here, but it's all extremely small pieces, much smaller than grains of sand. We'll need something to store it in, or the wind might just blow it away after I release it from my spell." Looking around, it became obvious there was nothing available to store the gold dust in. Just as Lusan was about to give up and arrange to try again next week, Neela said,
"What about my boot? Can you get it inside without the wind carrying it away?"
"Yes, I think I can. Let's give it a try," he said, turning back to the river.
Locating the gold again, he decided to work from left to right. He levitated a few hundred particles at a time from the riverbed to the surface, and then out of the river. The fine gold particles glistened in the sunlight as they arced through the air, forming a constant stream as they entered Neela's boot, which lay on the riverbank. Minutes passed before Neela could see more than a glimpse of gold in the bottom of her boot. As each particle entered the boot, Lusan released it to gravity and then searched out the next one on the riverbed to take its place. The constant glistening stream of gold dust now leaving the river and accumulating in Neela's right boot looked like a faint golden rainbow stretching out into the water. Lusan kept lifting the gold out of the sediment until he could no longer maintain the spell because of the range. When he had done all he could, he lay back on the riverbank with a sigh of relief.
"How did we do?"
he asked without sitting up.
"Take a look for yourself,"
Neela replied, holding out the boot for him to inspect the contents.
"Wow, not bad at all,"
he said, looking at the contents of the boot.
"Maybe enough to make a couple of gold coins in there."
"I would say so too,"
Neela agreed.
"Give me a few minutes to rest, and then I'll try to turn it into something more usable,"
he said, thinking about the best way to accomplish the task. After a few minutes' rest, he decided to have a go at making a coin or two from the gold dust. First, he magically separated half of the gold dust and contained it in a small force field so it didn't blow away with the wind. Levitating it out of the boot and away from where they were sitting, he concentrated on increasing the heat within the small force field. Hotter and hotter the space inside the force field became, until he could see the gold dust melt into liquid inside the mini spherical force field he had created. He concentrated again and began to manipulate the shape of his force field, recreating the shape of a coin. This was much harder than he thought it would be, because truth to be told, he hadn't seen too many gold coins in his lifetime to be very familiar with them in the first place. Eventually, he settled for the design of a silver coin, which he was sure would be close enough. After all, gold was gold. Once the molten gold was pressed into the shape of a coin, he sent it out over the water and lowered it into the cold, flowing river. Releasing the force field with a hissing sound, the coin instantly solidified into the shape of a coin. Then he lifted the now cool coin back out of the river and dropped it into his hand. Looking closely at the coin, he decided he was happy with his first attempt, but knew he could improve the design with further practice. Repeating the process, he created a second coin, so now he was holding two new shiny gold coins.
"Not bad," he said out loud to himself.
"Are you kidding me? That was amazing. I've never seen anything like that in my life. You just created gold coins out of thin air,"
Neela said, jumping around excitedly.
"Well, not quite out of thin air. The gold was already there in the river," he replied, grinning at her.
Flipping one of the coins in her direction, she deftly caught it in midair with her left hand, whilst trying to put her boot back on with her right.
"You're giving me one of your gold coins?"
she asked, looking a little shocked at his generosity.
"Of course, we're a team, remember?"
he replied, winking at her. She walked over to him and gave him a big hug before saying,
"Thank you, Lusan."
The rest of the day they spent in the forest, where Lusan taught Neela all about the edible plants of spring, which were just starting to show themselves in places here and there, before they headed back to town, a little richer, but still holding hands. Chapter 6. The following morning, Neela made her way to the bookroom, where she expected to find Lusan already at work. He was usually the first up and liked to get a good start, even before Neela went out on her daily shopping trip to buy their breakfast and other provisions.
"Morning,"
said Neela, smiling at Lusan sitting at his desk already hard at work. Good morning. Did you sleep well? He asked without looking up, still concentrating on his writing. When he finished his current entry, he placed his pen safely at the side of the inkwell and stood up from behind his desk, stretching out his stiff back with a groan.
Yes, thanks. How about you?
Neela replied.
Not too bad, I guess. But that mattress seems harder than the floor some nights, he replied, rubbing the base of his back.
Laughing, Neela replied,
Yeah, I know what you mean, but at least it's warmer and drier down here.
That's true, he agreed, smiling at her.
I was wondering if you wouldn't mind if I took a little longer today when I went out for our supplies, she asked hopefully.
Of course not. Did you have something else planned for today?
Lusam asked curiously.
Well, when I was forced to leave Stelgad in such a hurry, I had to leave some important things behind. I wasn't able to retrieve my belt of throwing knives, and I really miss having them. I've been thinking, because you gave me that gold coin yesterday, I might be able to call in at the blacksmith's shop and get some replacements made.
Sure, it's your money to do with as you wish,
he replied, forcing a smile onto his face. No matter how hard he tried, he could never imagine Neela as a cold killer, wielding daggers and throwing knives. But he knew firsthand how deadly she was with such weapons, even if it had only been in self-defense.
Thanks, Lusam. I won't be too long, I hope. Maybe an extra hour at the most. See you soon,
she said, turning and heading out of the bookroom with a spring in her step. Lusam waved as she left, and then went back to his desk to continue his work cataloguing the seemingly never-ending book mountain. Neela opened the door at the top of the stairs and stepped into the shop. Seeing Lucy at the counter, she noticed that she looked even worse than when she'd seen her the day before.
Good morning, Lucy. You really don't look well today. Maybe you should go and sit down. I can help you with whatever you're doing,
Neela said, concerned at her pale-looking face and the sweat beads on her forehead.
Oh, good morning, Neela. I'm fine, thank you. I just haven't felt myself these last few days. But I'm sure it will pass soon. I prefer to keep busy rather than mope around. But thanks for offering your help. I appreciate it,
Lucy replied, trying hard to look more energetic than she actually felt.
Okay, if you're sure. But don't overdo it working too hard. You need to rest, not work,
Neela chastised, sounding more like Lucy's mother than her employee. Lucy smiled and nodded her agreement, then continued with what she was doing before Neela had arrived. Neela looked back at Lucy as she left the shop and wondered if she would take her advice to rest, before coming to the conclusion that Lucy was a grown woman and could make her own decisions. Closing the shop door gently behind her, Neela started down the now familiar cobbled road toward the local blacksmith's shop, all the time tightly clutching the shiny new gold coin in her pocket, like a child on their way to a sweet shop. Neela had discovered there were three blacksmith shops in Helveel. One was in the north quarter, where all the rich traders and highborn lived. She doubted the blacksmith in that part of town had ever been asked to make a set of throwing knives in his life, not that she could have afforded to buy them even if he had. The second was in the south district, and although the price there should be more to her liking, she had been advised against using that blacksmith, as he specialized mainly as a horse farrier and was known locally for the poor quality of his metals. The only real option was the third blacksmith, who was located in the west quarter of the city. Thinking back to the last time she and Lusam had ventured through the streets of the west quarter, she cringed to herself at the thought of visiting that part of the city again. She remembered what Lusam had told her, that during the day the streets were as safe as the rest of the city, but that didn't stop her feeling nervous about venturing back into that part of Helveel alone. The streets in the west quarter seemed eerily quiet at this time of the morning. Neela imagined most of the trade in this part of the city was conducted during the hours of darkness for various reasons. She turned a corner and noticed a seedy-looking tavern with a sign hanging outside. There were two old drunks standing outside the open tavern door, leaning on each other for stability and singing old seafaring songs, badly. Looking at the sign, she realized for the first time in her life that she could actually read what the words said.
The ferret hole.
Feeling very pleased with herself, Neela continued along the cobbled street until reaching a junction where she took a sharp right turn. After walking for several more minutes, she began to get the distinct feeling that she was being followed. Looking back the way she had come, she searched the doorways and shadows for anyone that might be trying to hide there, but couldn't see any sign of anyone. Either her overactive imagination was playing tricks on her, or whoever was following her was very good at their job. Using the reflections in the glass shop windows as she passed, she tried to catch a glimpse of anyone who might be following her, but still she couldn't see any sign of anyone sneaking around behind her. Not knowing if the threat was real or simply in her head, she decided not to take any chances and increased her pace a little. As she turned the next corner, she set off at a jog down the wide street, still checking all the reflections and listening for anyone following as she went. When Neela finally reached what was classed as the main area of commerce in the West District, she started to relax as she joined the small crowds of people going about their daily business of buying and selling their wares. Checking one last time, she still couldn't see anyone following her, but decided she would take the much longer route back through the north quarter of the city when she later returned to the bookshop. The blacksmith shop was easy enough to find. A sign depicting a hammer and anvil hung above the door, swinging gently in the light morning breeze. The large, well-oiled door opened with ease and operated a bell as it did so, alerting the owner to her presence in the shop. Less than a minute later, a very muscular, middle-aged man with dark hair and a beard peppered with grey appeared from the back of the shop. Looking at him, Neela judged him to be in his mid to late 40s. Still wearing his apron and holding a strange-looking hammer, he nodded to Neela, looking her up and down, before saying,
"Hello there. Is there something I can help you with?"
"Yes, I hope so. I was told you made weapons here."
The man looked at her again, this time with a little more curiosity in his eyes. It was obvious he was used to being asked for weapons, but Neela guessed it wasn't so common for a young girl to be asking for them.
"What kind of weapon were you looking for, little lady?"
he asked, with more sarcasm in his voice than Neela could take. Swallowing her anger, knowing this man would probably be her only chance of replacing her lost weapons any time in the near future, she replied coolly,
"I was looking to purchase a set of throwing knives, but only if the quality of your weapons meet my high standards."
The blacksmith's face turned red with anger at her intended insult, and with an extreme look of contempt in his eyes, he spat back,
"I make the best weapons in Helvile, and probably all of Afaron, and I only sell them to people capable of wielding them with enough skill, not silly little girls like you."
Deciding she would rather wait for her knives forever than take any more insults from this man, Neela looked straight at him, and with as much venom in her voice as she could muster, replied,
"If you call me a little girl again, I'll show you just how much skill I do have, and kill you where you stand."
The blacksmith removed his hand from behind his apron and revealed he was carrying a wicked-looking knife. Dropping his hammer, he lunged towards Neela's throat with his weapon. Neela had already removed her daggers and intercepted his attack with blinding speed and accuracy, parrying his attack harmlessly to the side. Faster and faster, they acted and reacted to each other's attacks, neither gaining the upper hand. Neela was impressed with the man's skill level. Apart from her old guild leader, she had never seen anyone as skillful with a weapon as this blacksmith. Together, they danced a deadly waltz in the middle of his shop, until Neela saw an opening and took it. Disarming him of his knife, her dagger came swiftly to his throat. As she looked into his eyes, expecting to see fear, she saw only amusement instead. The blacksmith suddenly started laughing at her. Neela was so incensed by him, she was about to end him, when he casually said,
"Very good. Looks like you do have a small amount of skill after all. Seems I was wrong about you."
"Some skill. Looks like you're a dead man to me,"
Neela replied, with her dagger still pressed against his neck.
"I wouldn't be sure of that if I were you,"
the blacksmith replied, as he applied a little pressure to a dagger Neela had failed to see, now pressed against her ribcage, ready to pierce her heart.
"Damn, this guy's good," she thought to herself. "So, are you going to sell me some knives or not?"
The blacksmith roared with laughter at her casual remark before lowering his dagger and taking a step back out of harm's way.
"You must be new in these parts. Which guild do you belong to?"
he asked, putting his weapons away behind his apron and then retrieving his hammer from the floor.
"I'm not part of any guild. I approached one when I first arrived in Helvile and they refused to take me. They thought I might be a spy, I guess. I didn't think it would be too healthy to approach a second guild."
"Smart as well. I like you, girl. Looks like they missed an opportunity to gain a skilled fighter by refusing you entry to their guild,"
he replied, still smiling at her. Neela got the impression his last statement was as close to a compliment as the man had ever given, and she nodded her approval.
"Come, let's go see what we can do about these knives of yours. My workshop is in the back," he said, pointing towards the door he had first emerged through.
Neela followed him into the back of the shop, and was quite surprised at how much larger this area was compared with the part of the shop she had first entered from the street. There were two huge open doors leading out to what looked like a small private courtyard. Two forges stood in the center of the room, both equipped with bellows and chimneys that disappeared up through the high roof, and various containers of water which must have been used for cooling the metal after it came out of the forges. Looking towards the back of the workshop, Neela noticed the whole wall was covered in all manner of weaponry. There were weapons of all shapes and sizes, swords, maces, axes, halberds, pikes, daggers, and many other deadly-looking items she didn't even know the names of. Slightly startling her from her thoughts regarding all the weapons, the blacksmith asked,
"So, what kind of knives were you looking for?"
I was looking for a price on a set of throwing knives, and a leather belt to hold them, if that's something you can do as well,"
she replied, still glancing between him and the huge collection of weapons hanging on the wall.
"Well, for a standard set of 6 knives, I charge 2 gold. I have a local leather worker who crafts the belts for another 2 silver. I can have them made in 3 days' time for you, along with the belt. I would need 1 gold as a deposit before I start to make them, however."
Neela was quite shocked at the cost of creating a set of throwing knives and thought of how foolish she would look when she informed him that she couldn't afford his services after all. She had never bought any weapons for herself in the past. They had always been provided for her by one of the blacksmith shops owned by her guild. Seeing her hesitation, the blacksmith added,
"I can assure you my weapons are of the finest quality and made from the highest grades of metal money can buy."
Now feeling a little foolish at not asking the price when she first entered the shop, she quietly replied,
"Yes, I'm sure the quality of your weapons are second to none, but unfortunately I only have 1 gold at present. I apologize for wasting your time, sir."
Looking away from the blacksmith and waiting for his angry reply, she was surprised to only hear a good-humored laugh instead.
"I might still be able to help you. There's a reason I take a 1 gold deposit on such items. The kind of work carried out by the people who order such weapons can be dangerous, as I'm sure you already know. I don't always come back to collect what they have ordered, as you can see from my wall over there," he said, pointing towards the large assortment of weapons. "I do have a set of 6 throwing knives that were ordered around 2 months ago now. The man that ordered them has never been back to pay the balance and collect his weapons. I always inform my customers that I'll only keep them for 1 month after making them. After that, they get sold or smelted back into raw materials, and they lose their deposit. If they aren't happy about that, they can always come back and discuss it with me if they choose,"
he said, grinning at Neela. Neela had no doubts about how that conversation would resolve itself, and she was very sure no refunds would be forthcoming.
"The knives were ordered to his specifications. If you're willing to live with that, I can let you have them for your 1 gold. You want to take a look at them?"
"Yeah, sure. Thanks,"
Neela replied, not believing her luck. The blacksmith walked over to a large table near the back of the shop and sorted through a pile of items before returning with the set of throwing knives and handing it to Neela. She took the belt from him and walked over to an empty table where she could better inspect the knives. The first thing she noticed was the belt. It was skillfully made and very robust-looking. It was a little heavier than the one she used to own, but that was probably because they were made for a time when she was a little younger. The knives were also very skillfully crafted, a much better quality than her old ones. But again, they were larger and heavier. They were made from 1 solid piece of steel, and the handles had been drilled to balance them. Lifting and twirling them in her hand, she noticed they weren't entirely balanced correctly. Confused as to why such a well-made knife wouldn't be balanced correctly, she said,
"These knives are certainly very well made, but I noticed the balance isn't quite right on them."
"I see you also know your weapons well,"
he replied, nodding at her keen observation.
"You're correct. The knives are not perfectly balanced. The man who ordered the weapons favored a slightly heavier handle. The reason he preferred them that way is only known to him, I'm afraid. Like I said, if you're willing to live with his specifications, they're yours for only 1 gold."
Neela couldn't deny the quality of the weapons in front of her, nor could she afford to buy a newly crafted set to her own specifications from him, or probably anyone else for that matter. After thinking about the various options available to her, which were definitely limited given her current funds, she decided to go out on a limb and said,
"Okay, I'll take them, on one condition. At that price, you throw in a small metal file so I can balance them myself. I'm sure you know unbalanced throwing knives aren't going to be at the top of most people's shopping lists, and you could be stuck with them for a long time."
The blacksmith roared with laughter, so loud that it made her jump.
"Okay, you have yourself a deal, girl. Looks like you bought yourself a set of throwing knives. Most people who come in here I take an instant dislike to. But you? I like. You have spirit, girl. If you ever decide you want to join a guild in Hellville, come and see me first. I know a lot of people. I'm sure I can pull some strings and get you into one of the top guilds here,"
he said, slapping her on the shoulders and knocking the wind right out of her. Picking up her new set of throwing knives, she fastened them around her waist. The belt was wide and comfortable, and she doubted she would have to make any alterations to it. She accepted the small file and bid him farewell, before returning to the front of the shop and exiting back out onto the cobbled street. The comforting weight at her waist made her feel like she was fully dressed again, for the first time in a long time. Neela decided to buy their provisions in the West Quarter marketplace while it was still early enough to get the better quality items. After she'd bought what they needed, she turned and headed towards the north quarter of the city. The journey would take more than twice as long, but she didn't want to go back through the West Quarter alone again. The journey back to the shop was long and uneventful. Although Neela was almost sure no one was actually following her, and it was all just in her head, she still fell back on her years of training and took a route back to the bookshop that would lose any potential pursuers. She entered several shops that she knew had more than one exit, switching streets and alleys as she left each one, entering via one door and quickly exiting through another, staying within crowds wherever possible, and making it almost impossible to follow her path back to the bookshop. When she finally arrived at the street where the bookshop was located, she quickly checked that no one would see her entering the shop before opening the door and slipping inside. She then swiftly closed the door behind herself. The shop area was empty, so she called out to the back of the shop to inform them it was only her entering, and so there was no need to come through to serve any potential customers. She thought she heard a reply and continued downstairs to meet up with Lusam again. Entering the bookroom, she almost walked straight into a large pile of books floating through the air towards where Lusam was standing.
"I've got us some breakfast," Neela said,
holding out a sweet pastry wrapped in brown paper and an apple.
"Mmm, thanks, I'm starving. I don't know why, but doing magic always makes me feel ravenous," he said.
Lusam took the two items from Neela, opened the packet containing the sweet pastry, and completely wolfed it down, even before Neela had opened hers.
"I think I'd better start buying you more food if you're going to eat it that fast,"
Neela said, laughing at Lusam's face, which now had sticky fruit sauce all around his mouth.
"Sorry,"
he replied, trying to clean around his mouth with his tongue.
"Did you manage to find what you were looking for?" "Yes, kind of. I got a set of throwing knives, but I'll have to balance them myself. It's a long story,"
she replied, before filling him in on all the details. Lusam looked quite worried when she recounted the part of the story where she had fought the blacksmith, but he didn't comment on it.
"Sounds like you had some fun this morning," Lusam said, still trying to get every last bit of the apple from its core.
"Yeah, nothing like an early morning workout," she replied, laughing.
Neela decided not to tell him about the strange feelings of being followed, in case he thought she was just being paranoid.
"How's it going with the books? Seems you have a large stack to sort through at the moment,"
Neela said, trying to change the subject.
"It's going much faster now that I can move large numbers of books with my magic. I guess we don't need that wheelbarrow anymore," he replied. "It should be a lot easier on our backs from now on, too."
"If you don't need me to move books for the time being, would you mind if I start balancing these knives?"
Neela asked, hopefully.
"No problem at all," replied Lusam.
He was happy that she would have something to occupy herself with while he continued cataloguing the books.
"Do you have any of that chalk left you used on the walls?" Neela asked.
"Yeah, there are a couple of sticks of it here. How many do you need?"
"Oh, just one is fine, thanks. I found an old table in one of the rooms a while back. I was planning to take it into the large room. I figured that if I stood it up against the wall and drew some targets on it with chalk, it would help me balance my knives.
Lusam found the chalk and handed a stick to Neela. There's more if you need it. Do you need a hand with that old table? He asked.
Thanks, but it didn't look very heavy. Besides, I doubt if it matters if I damage it slightly by dragging it around if I'm going to be throwing knives at it anyway, she said, laughing.
True, I guess, he agreed, laughing along with her. If you do need any help, just let me know.
Okay, thanks. I think I'll eat my breakfast first, then go get the table, she said,
finding a seat on a pile of books and opening her own sweet pastry. Noticing Lusam hungrily eyeing up her breakfast, she just laughed and tossed her apple to him.
Here, eat this. I'm not that hungry at the moment, and I can't train on a full stomach anyway.
Lusam deftly caught the apple in mid-flight, smiled at her, and started munching on the juicy apple. Neela just smiled at him, shaking her head ever so slightly to herself, and continued eating her pastry. Later that morning, Neela managed to move the old table into the main chamber. She removed the legs from the table quite easily. In fact, it almost removed its own legs as it stood swaying from side to side. It looked like the old wood had dried out completely, and the joints had become very loose. It had been a simple task of pushing it to one side, and the legs had just folded under the table with the sideways pressure. She was now left with a large board which had once been the tabletop. It was about the same height as her when she stood it up against the wall, and maybe twice as wide as a person. For a few moments, Neela wondered what type of target to draw on the large board, before deciding it might as well be human-shaped. Standing with her back to the board, she traced, as best she could, around her own body with the chalk onto the tabletop, switching hands with the chalk several times in the process. When she had finished, she took a few steps back and looked at the outline.
Not bad, she thought to herself.
A few minutes spent on strengthening the lines and smoothing parts out, and she was left with an accurate outline of a person of average height. She added a few targets within the outline to represent various kill points, before moving back 10 paces to have a go at throwing a knife at the target. She knew the knives were not balanced, but decided to see how they would fly anyway. It didn't take Neela long to realize they were a long way from perfect for her. Over half of them hit the target handle first, which for obvious reasons wouldn't be much good in a fight of life and death. Neela knew she could adapt to them eventually, but that meant almost having to relearn the skill of throwing knives all over again, something she wasn't prepared to do. An advantage of center-balanced knives was the fact you could throw them accurately from either the handle or the blade, something you couldn't do with an unbalanced knife. If you trained to throw balanced knives, you could throw any balanced knife accurately. If you normally used unbalanced knives, you would have to learn each knife set individually, which could be a big disadvantage, especially if you happened to have just picked up a random knife during a fight, only to find out you couldn't throw it accurately. Thinking about the knives, her best guess was that the man who had originally ordered them had been taught to throw using an unbalanced set, and therefore he would always order them that way if he could, to maintain his accuracy. Neela knew she preferred them balanced, and so she started the long process of filing the handles of each knife to achieve a perfect balance point. It was hard work, and she estimated she was only about halfway through balancing the first knife when Lusam came into the room and announced he was hungry again. Rolling her eyes, she pointed towards the package of food near the door before continuing to file her knife handle. "That looks like a laborious job," Lusam said, nodding towards the knife and file in her hands.
"No kidding. The metal that blacksmith used is very good quality, but it makes it incredibly difficult to file anything off because it's so hard,"
Neela replied, slightly out of breath and sweating.
"Can I take a look?" Lusam asked, holding out his hand.
Neela handed him the knife and then watched as he inspected the file work she had already done on the handle.
"How much more do you think you need to take off?" "I'm not sure. Maybe about the same amount again. I prefer the handle and blade to be perfectly balanced at the halfway point, or as close as possible," she replied, pointing to the center of another knife.
"I see," he replied, studying the knife carefully.
"I noticed you're filing off the weight from the handle. Would it make any difference if the blade was slightly longer and the handle equally shorter?" "No, not really. I'm making the handle shorter anyway by filing it. Balance is the most important thing for a throwing knife. Why'd you ask?" "Well, remember when I made those gold coins? I think I could do something similar with your knives. I could put them in a force field, heat them up, and lengthen the blade slightly.
Metal from the handle would be added to the blade section as I manipulate the force field, he replied, with a thoughtful look on his face.
Really? You could do that?
Neela asked, a little shocked at his suggestion. Well, I guess there's only one way to find out, but they're your knives, so you have to decide whether to take the gamble.